Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business Magazine, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. 2019 is still young, but the 116th Congress has been in session for a few weeks now, and I thought it might be a good moment to check in with the two national associations working on behalf of providers, the American Association for Home Care and the National Coalition for Assistive and Rehab Technology, otherwise known as AA Home Care and NCART, respectively, to find out what they have in the works in terms of their legislative and regulatory efforts. After a lively 2018, clearly there will be lots in store for 2019, and I talk with the heads of both organizations. So, without further introduction, let's dive in. I'm here with Tom Ryan, the president and CEO of the American Association for Home Care, to talk about the industry's top legislative priorities and regulatory priorities for 2019. Tom, how are you?
Good. Great to be here today, David. Thank you for allowing us to have some conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Tom, probably a good place to start off with is the new Congress. We now have the 116th, and it's a different legislative makeup than before. How is the association and industry advocates poised to work with this new Congress?
Well, as you're well aware, the 116th Congress not only changed in the House when it comes to who's the leader in the House, it was Republican control, it's now Democrat control. So all the key committees of jurisdiction, Ways and Means, and Senate Finance on the Senate side, and Energy and Commerce in the House side, the leaders we had been working with are now changing. So that is going to be a big, big change for us. There's over 100 new members in the 116th Congress. Many of them don't have a history with the industry, so that could be good and bad because we have gained a lot of credibility over the years, but there had been some left that continued to talk the old message that we're being paid too much. So, and then some of our champions, like Catherine Morris Rogers, their key staff that we had been working with have left. So we now need to make new friends and get our message out, and we're in the process of doing that. We still have commitments from our champions at this point who had, you know, carried the mantle for us last year in the last Congress, and they're willing to work with our initiatives this Congress, and we're working the details out. So making friends.
There you go. Making friends. I like it. Well, and these, just for everybody in the audience, these committees of jurisdiction are important. And maybe we could quickly dive into that. Why are these committees so important in advancing the industry's legislative objectives?
Well, on the healthcare side, if you're going to get anything done, you need to go through Ways and Means and Energy and Commerce. Those are the committees that have jurisdiction over HHS and Medicare. So they're the committees you need to work with. We had a very good relationship with Nick Yalecki, who was one of the key Republican Ways and Means staffers there, who understood our issues and was a champion for us. But, you know, now Nick has actually left Ways and Means and moved on, and we've got to now meet his counterpart on the D side and make those same connections.
Aha.
So it comes about who controls the budget, who controls those dollars, and those key committees are who controls CMS's dollars.
Gotcha. And they can kind of keep legislation in committee if they want to. They kind of decide whether or not something advances or not.
Absolutely. I mean, you could have a standalone bill come out from a member of Congress that are outside of one of those committees of jurisdiction. But if you don't get the sign off from the health chair, health sub chair, and the chair of those committees, it's really not going to move anywhere when it comes to getting it signed into law.
Well, and talking about making friends, how would you assess your chances going into this? Are you guys making some good relationships already?
Well, it's ironic. I had a meeting last week with Tom Suozzi, who's been my congressional member for several years, and he has now been put on the important Ways and Means Committee. So we had a good face-to-face last week, kind of want to know I was here, and we talked about it. He's going to come out and probably visit my business at one point. I told him his counterparts had done that all along. I still do have a business in New York that's there. I told them about the history of what the competitive bidding program did to my business and why I'm where I'm at today.
Mm-hmm.
He is somebody that is a new friend and you know, my member of Congress. So I was there as a constituent, which was a different feeling and a good feeling.
There you go. I bet. Well, so let's toggle over to the agenda items. What are some of the, key sort of legislative and regulatory agenda items? I imagine the bid gap is a big issue going into 2019.
Yeah, we want to pick up basically where we can on H.R. 4229, and we've discussed this with our champions and we're in a process of getting some legislative language reviewed. So, again, passing federal legislation to provide relief for the non-bid, non-CB areas are very, very important to us. As you're well aware, the rule provided until 2020, that 50-50 blended relief for the non-bid rural area,
yeah,
but it left the non-bid, non-rural area with those unsustainable rates, and that's concerning. I mean, Congress or the agency admitted that the program was broken. There was market failure going on. We need to put it on hold and fix it, yet they left those same failing market rates in place, and that's very concerning. So we hope any legislation would give us relief beyond 2020 when we have the rule relief of 50-50, and then get immediate relief for the non-bid, non-rural area.
Yeah, and just to clarify for the listeners, really what we're talking about is all the non-bid areas that aren't rural, that are in the lower 48. It's that non-contiguous, contiguous versus non-contiguous, correct?
That's correct, yes.
So
the other ones that need the relief, and they've got no relief. They didn't get any increased market share as the urban bidders did. But they've got competitive bidding rates, and that's a travesty.
Yeah, yeah. So in addition to that, what are some other kind of top-line items for you?
Well, another key one is the budget neutrality. We've taken so many stabs at this on a regulatory front. We think that the agency is wrong in applying budget neutrality to a bid program, but they changed it a little bit in the fact that they now are applying the offset. It used to be applied to the OGPE category. So back before bidding, when they allowed for this new technology, as patients migrated to the new technology, they would offset that increase in payment by decreasing the stationary oxygen payment. So what the latest rule in November did was they made that offset over all oxygen equipment and classes. So it made it a little bit more sustainable, but it's still an issue. It's got to go away. So when you looked at those rates that came out in 2019, we saw some 2.5% increase in spa areas, maybe 2.3% CPIU increase in for DME items not included in the bid program. But when you looked at the details of those oxygen categories, we saw some pretty significant changes because of the budget neutrality. So that's got to be repealed. And it's got to be done on a legislative basis because we cannot convince the agency that doesn't make any sense to do it in the bid program.
And just for the listeners' sake, CPIU, that refers to the consumer price index for all urban consumers. So basically, it's inflation, including the volatile food and energy sectors. If I understand correctly, when CMS is making adjustments, they're making it based on that price index.
That's correct, David. That's correct. So those are some key legislative initiatives. But beyond that, we want to continue to work. Just CRT relief, we need to get that done and pass some relief that almost made it in the last Congress for manual accessories. We are actually working on some CRT issues in the states, looking to get some wins in the states as well. I think it's also important that we continue to make sure that the bid products and when those products are announced, we're doing everything we can to make sure that ventilators and urologicals and ostomies are not included in the next round of bidding. So that's been a key for us. Those continue to be points that we talk about up on the Hill. We're collaborating with the patient communities and the caregiver communities, ALS, et cetera. We were at a meeting with Lawrence Wilson a couple of weeks ago and combined, had well over 600 to 700 comments just on the vents alone.
Jeez Louise.
And we continue to advocate that as a program is broken and you're fixing it, it's not a time to bring in critical patients who are on ventilators on a price point only bid system. So we'll continue to advocate for that. And then lastly, just make sure that there's no more cuts to the industry, that we're not part of some offset that we have been part of in the past to pay for somebody else's, initiative here to be paying anything. So being on the defensive that we're not in somebody's radar screen for a bite at our apple, because there's not much left. We need to get stabilized rates here.
Exactly. Well, and that seems to always be kind of the perennial fear is what's happening in the other sectors. So so toggling over to payer relations, obviously you guys have a lot going on there as well. That's become a real, if I had to guess, that's an equal share of the association's priorities these days.
Yes, it is. I mean, we can, payer relations, we brought on Laura Willard 2.5 years ago. The feeling was that we needed to probably be a little bit more engaged in what's going on in the states on the managed care and the Medicaid managed care with all the mandatory transitions to managed care. And we found that we can't keep Laura, in her home state very often because she's traveling around the country trying to put out these fires. So we've determined in our budget for 2019, we need another Laura Willard type. I'm happy to say that Laura and I have been interviewing over the last month, had some great, great candidates, and we will be making an announcement on another person who will be in the plan. You know, our goal is to be more strategic in our approach as opposed to running around to states that have forest fires we need to put out. We want to continue to prove the value of the association, the value of home care, and fend off these cuts. Everywhere you look, there's a state that's having an issue. We need to get wins there. I'm also happy to hear that we on the state level, we're just engaged Bridge Public Affairs. This is a new group that does some lobbying on the state level. And John Goetz, Todd Womack, John was at Permobil, and he is now kind of hugging a shingle up doing some lobbying on the state level. Ah. So we're engaging them to do some work for us on getting some wins on the state level. So that's key to us as well.
All right. Well, Tom, I appreciate the update. Obviously, your agenda is already packed. It's only February. I wish everybody at the association lots of luck on carrying this load.
Yeah, listen, David, we haven't even talked about the regulatory part. I can give you a couple of updates there. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Even though we're on hold in this gap period for 2 years, there's a tremendous amount of work that's going on the sub-regulatory basis. Kara Bockenheimer, Kim Brummett and team, we have been getting our comments in, met with Lawrence Wilson and team to go over some of our suggestions, product categories, where suggestion was one we recently did. Just today, we got our comments in on capacity, and we will be doing more comments on bona fide bids in the next week or so. So a lot of work on the sub-regulatory things that can come out through rulemaking to continue to make sure that the program as it moves forward is done the right way with transparency. So we have a much better idea how they come up with their capacity and the pricing than we do. Which we did not know in the last rounds.
Well, it sounds like we'll definitely have to be talking to Laura and this new person on the payer relations side of things, and Kim and Kara on the regulatory side of things as well.
Absolutely. A lot going on, and we continue to fight for our members and make it a fair, stable environment so they can continue to thrive and serve the patients in need.
All right. Well, thanks a bunch, Tom.
Thank you, David. Have a great day.
Of course, home medical equipment isn't the only part of the industry's legislative agenda. Complex rehab technology is a special microcosm within the industry. And in fact, one could argue that it might be an industry unto itself. And in that regard, I'm speaking with Don Clayback, the Executive Director for the National Coalition for Assisted and Rehab Technology, about the CRT legislative and regulatory objectives for the year. Don, how you doing?
Good, David. Thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Well, at any rate, we did kind of have a nail biter there at the end of the year with the legislation to protect accessories for manual CRT chairs. And if anything, that's kind of setting the stage for going right into 2019. Don, maybe you could tell us a bit about that, you know, kind of quickly summarize what happened at the end of the year and what that means for 2019.
Sure. No, that's great, David. To hit the highlights, we were working on the bill HR 3730 during 2018 that related to stopping Medicare from using competitive bid payment rates to set the payment amounts for complex rehab technology manual wheelchair accessories. And we had made good progress on that throughout the year. We actually finished with 123 co-sponsors on the bill. And we were pushing for legislation at the end of the year. We were able to actually get included in a year-end bill that included three small bills, one of them being a complex rehab technology bill around CRT manual wheelchairs. And then there were two other bills related to Medicaid programs. So that those bills were combined and they went first to the House of Representatives, where they were passed by a vote of 400 to 11. So it was an overwhelming majority and really was a great sign of support. Then the bill moved to the Senate, and the way the Senate was processing it, because it was at year end, is they were doing it through what they call the unanimous consent process, which is designed for bills that are expected to not have too much not really have any opposition, and it's meant to expedite the legislative process. So the good news is it can be a good thing, but unfortunately, if any one senator decides that they have a problem with any of the bill, they're able to put on what they call a hold, and that basically stops the bill from moving forward. Typically, the way it works is someone puts a hold on it, and then the other Senate members work with that member to try and address their concerns so that they can remove their hold and the bill could move forward and be voted on. But because of the tight time frame, we were, you know, in a year-end crunch.
Yeah.
Because of all the shutdown things that were going on, unfortunately, that hold was not removed. So the bill, in essence, died in the Senate.
Yeah, it lapsed because the 115th Congress ended. So now you got to start up again.
Exactly.
And to that point, are you working on legislative for manual CRT accessories going into 2019?
Definitely, because the good news is we had that strong support at the end of the year, you know, passing through the House in a majority, and then really, in essence, passing through the Senate because the hold didn't have anything to do with us. We're going to be introducing a standalone bill that will still have both of those provisions. And there were really two important provisions in the bill. One of them related to manual wheelchair accessories, but the other one would provide a permanent exemption for complex rehab manual wheelchair bases from the competitive bidding program. So our plans right now is we're already talking to our champions. We expect the bill to be introduced shortly. And then hopefully, you know, we can capitalize on that momentum we had at the end of the year.
That's and that's an interesting one because talking about the bases, hasn't it always been everybody's understanding that they were carved out from competitive bidding from the get-go, or was that carve out only temporary? Or educate me.
No, sure. No, that's a great question, and I think it's definitely worthy of clarification. Historically, complex rehab power wheelchairs and manual wheelchairs have not been included in competitive bidding. Power wheelchairs have not been included because they are statutorily exempted. Manual wheelchairs have been excluded because CMS has made the connection to say, since Congress passed an exemption for CRT power wheelchairs, because they're used with people with high-level disabilities or used for by people with high-level disabilities, they apply that same concept and have up to this point kept them out of the competitive bidding program. But since the CRT manual wheelchairs are not specified in law, this would in essence clarify or make a technical correction so that Congress is on record as saying we believe both CRT power wheelchairs and CRT manual wheelchairs are inappropriate for the competitive bidding program.
Aha, aha. Okay. So now, do you have any other legislation that you're going to be pursuing in 2019?
We do. The other big bill that we've been working historically on is a piece of legislation to create a separate benefit category for CRT. Mm-hmm. And this really has been the foundation of our legislative efforts for the past 7 or 8 years. This bill has comprehensive improvements and is designed to really segregate the specialized equipment that falls under complex RIAD technology and put that into its separate category. Right now it's included in the DME category, but under the DMEPOS Medicare benefit, there's a category for durable medical equipment. And for example, there's also a category for orthotics and prosthetics. So for artificial limbs and braces, we're looking to have that same recognition apply to CRT and create a separate category for that. So we'll be introducing that bill. And we've historically had very good support for that. But the reality is for the past 4 years, our priority has been on the CRT power wheelchair accessory issue and the CRT manual wheelchair accessory mm-hmm. issue. So once we get that behind us, we're looking forward to be able to devote our full efforts to the HR 750 bill. HR 750 was the bill last year. We'll have a new bill number this year. And actually, we're going to be updating the bill to make sure it addresses today's environment. And we're going to look to increase its chances of passage by incorporating comments we've gotten from Congress and other policymakers over the last several years.
Gotcha. All right. Well, shifting from the legislative front, what does the CRT industry have coming up on the regulatory side of things?
On the regulatory side, at least from a federal perspective, we're looking to continue to work with CMS and consumer organizations around the Medicare coverage for power wheelchair seat elevation mm-hmm. and standing. Those are two components or features of wheelchairs that currently Medicare does not cover. And they really both provide important medical and functional benefits to someone who has a high-level disability. And in fact, they're covered by many other insurance plans. But unfortunately, Medicare has does not provide coverage for those items under their current policies. So we've been working in support of some of the consumer and clinician organizations that have been meeting with CMS to have them make that policy change.
And that's a real interesting one because, you know, when I look at things like seat elevation and standing, obviously there's clinical benefits, but from just a normal daily activity, it seems like such an obvious thing to provide people who need to use wheelchairs.
Exactly. I mean, and it's one of those things that it doesn't make sense on its surface. It doesn't make sense when you look at the medical research. And also when you talk to clinicians and people that use power wheelchairs and other technology, there's a real need on many fronts. And hopefully through a energized educational process, we'll get CMS to make the needed policy changes.
I love it. Energized education.
Yeah.
That is great. Okay. Well, on the state side of things, I think you have some things coming up when it comes to Medicaid and managed care.
Exactly. You know, when it comes to complex rehab technology, Medicaid and managed Medicaid are very important funders of this type of technology. And unfortunately, there's challenges on the state level that historically we've been working on, and we're going to even increase those efforts as we look at 2019. On the legislative front, we're going to be pursuing state legislation where it makes sense in a particular state. But we also have a program where we're going to be engaging some legal advocacy resources to work with the Medicaid managed care organizations and hopefully resolve issues where they really aren't following federal statutes that require the managed care organizations to be providing the same level of access as someone would have if they were under the traditional Medicaid program.
Yeah.
So we spent a fair amount of time on that this past year, but this year we're going to be bringing additional resources to the table. And I think we've got, you know, some very good statutory regulations that we can bring into the conversation and hopefully resolve some of these access problems.
Okay. Well, Don, thank you so much for telling us about the legislative and the regulatory events you have coming up. Best of luck.
Great, David. Thank you. And we look forward to people supporting us, and we look forward to making it a great year for access to complex rehab technology.
Okay, there you go. Well, if you want to find out more about AA Home Care, make sure to visit aahomecare.org online. And to learn more about NCART, point your browser at ncart.us. Remember, if you want to stay on top of what's happening in the industry, make sure to check out hme-business.com. Again, that's hme-business.com. And subscribe to our eSource weekly e-newsletter service. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. And of course, you can follow HME Business online via social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter, and I'm at Post Acute News on Twitter. And of course, there's this podcast. Please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode we post. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. Okay, I think we'll wrap things up for this episode. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me via Twitter. Again, that's at Post News, or you can reach me by email at dkopf@1105media.com. Again, that's dkopf@1105media.com. All right. Thank you all very much for listening, and goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.